Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I am here for the sole purpose of articulating the sentiments and aspirations of the lovely and wonderful people of Denver, the people who have entrusted me to represent the interests by the democratic process of the ballot once again. Mr. Speaker, I remain unapologetic to those who hope and pray that I may not return to this August Assembly. Those who had no faith in my return to this House had no idea whatsoever what hard work, commitment, with a people-centered focus is all about. That, Mr. Speaker, is the philosophy of SP for All. This is a philosophy, Mr. Speaker, rooted in humility and service to country. This is how, Mr. Speaker, true leadership harvests progress and success for the constituents. We in Denry, Mr. Speaker, are people of courage, compassion, and love. I want to warn, even caution, this regime, Mr. Speaker, to ensure that there is equity in the distribution of resources around our 238 square miles of our fair Helen, like we did in our tenure, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it is my sincere hope that the equity of resource distribution, which was mentioned by the member for Castries South during his presentation on the estimate of expenditure, and was echoed yesterday by him again, is not just the equity of lip service. The member in question is by large considered an honest individual. A good boy, Mr. Speaker. If there is anyone, Mr. Speaker, who can ensure a measure of control and perhaps guidance that good governance is delivered in a manner that is participatory, consensus-oriented, accountable, transparent, responsive, effective, and efficient, then perhaps, Mr. Speaker, the members of Castries South can help in ensuring that the views of those representing political minorities are taken into account, and that the voices of the most vulnerable in society are heard in decision-making, and that it is responsive, Mr. Speaker, to the present and future needs of society in an equitable and inclusive manner. When we speak of minority, Mr. Speaker, let it be known that those constituencies represented by opposition members do not, and I repeat, do not constitute minorities. We, Mr. Speaker, are duly elected by the people. We work for the people and stand united with the people. So we have to be careful. Mr. Speaker, I only hope that the elements of narrow party political consideration do not creep in. I also hope that the new members on the other side do not press the brakes on the members' good intentions. Although I have heard a similar echo coming from the member for Denver North, although he has mentioned that there will be equity in the distribution of resources for the development of sports. This is not what has obtained so far. I can quickly mention here, Mr. Speaker, that, I mean, the minister, the member, when he took control of the Ministry of Youth and Sports Development, there was a field rehabilitation in the village of Denwe, and the necessary attention has not been given to this facility, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we are in serious and critical times. Times which require the wisdom of Solomon and the faith of Moses. Mr. Speaker, the IMF World Economic Outlook of January 24, 2012 tells us that the global recovery is threatened by intensifying strains in the euro area and fragilities elsewhere. Financial considerations have deteriorated. Financial conditions have deteriorated. Growth prospects have dimmed, and downside risks have escalated. While global outlook is projected to expand by 3.25% in 2012, this, Mr. Speaker, is largely because the euro area economy is now expected to go into a mild recession in 2012. As a result of the rise in sovereign yields, as a result of the effects of the bank deleveraging on the real economy, and as a result of the impact of additional fiscal consolidation. Mr. Speaker, the warning is clear that growth in emerging and developing countries is also expected to slow because of the worsening external environment and the weakening of internal demand. The most immediate policy challenge is to restore confidence and to put an end to the crisis in the euro area by supporting growth. By supporting growth, Mr. Speaker, while sustaining adjustment, containing deleveraging, and providing more liquidity and monetary accommodation. In emerging and developing economies, Mr. Speaker, the near-term policy should focus on responding to moderating domestic growth and to slowing external demand from advanced economies. Mindful of these realities, Mr. Speaker, I beg the question, what are the practical policy prescriptions that this budget has in place to meet the tidal wave of challenges that are racing towards us like a tsunami? Mr. Speaker, public management is being affected by two seemingly contradictory forces. On the one hand, Mr. Speaker, many national issues have been redefined by globalization trends, such as environmental concerns, such as human rights concerns, such as economic concerns, such as trade and aid imperatives, and, Mr. Speaker, the need for international standards. The increased speed of and access to communication have also catapulted national problems into international arenas. On the flip side of the coin, Mr. Speaker, on the other hand, there are demands for independence. People are crying out for independence in our beloved country. There is a greater autonomy, and there is a need for decentralization of services and of resources. Mr. Speaker, public administration represents the authority system for government in action, which is the product of political dynamics. The public administration is instrumental in its operation and is expected to carry out politically determined goals and values. That, Mr. Speaker, is evident when the Prime Minister, the Minister for Finance, presented his budget, and he made frequent reference of the blueprint for growth, and which was constantly repeated by the member for Kashmir East. Again, Mr. Speaker, where in the budget are the national goals and international resources and institutional resources as it relates to 1, national savings. National savings, Mr. Speaker. Where are the resources as it relates to that? Mr. Speaker, one of the principal strategies of development necessary for any country to tick off is the national savings ratio, or national savings rate, which is the percentage of GDP that is saved by households across the country. Most experts, Mr. Speaker, view this as an important prerequisite of economic advancement in the development of nations, in the development path of aspiring nations. Mr. Speaker, as a capital fundamental, the crucial role of savings and investment in generating economic growth cannot be underestimated. Where are the programs to support this? Where is it, Mr. Speaker? The answer, Mr. Speaker, is blowing in the wind. Mr. Speaker, the second issue relates to commitment to export. Commitment to export. Export-led growth is a critical economic strategy, Mr. Speaker. For the Asian Tigers, the strategic agenda was not just a commitment to industrialization, but to export-oriented industrialization. There are lessons to be learned here, Mr. Speaker. Number 3, Mr. Speaker. Modernization of society through industrialization, social development, the application of science and technology, and changes in socio-economic relationships and behavior. Where, Mr. Speaker, in the budget are the national goals for that? Mr. Speaker, the member for Sufre must understand that this cannot be achieved by just placing social transformation officers in the various communities as he postulated yesterday. Social development is defined in the broadest social terms as an upward directional movement of society from lesser to greater levels of energy, to greater levels of efficiency, quality, productivity, complexity, comprehension, creativity, choice, mastery, enjoyment and accomplishment, Mr. Speaker. Development of individuals and societies results in increasing freedom of choice and increasing capacity to fulfill its choices by its own capacity and initiative, Mr. Speaker. Number 4, Mr. Speaker. Where in the budget are the national goals as it relates to increased participation, thereby bringing about representative institutions, political equality, participative governance, and the guarantee of collective and individual rights? Tell me where, Mr. Speaker, participatory governance is not achieved by any means necessary, as the government is saying. It is not. Not in the case, and let me use a small example, Mr. Speaker, not in the case of Denry, where the village council is appointed and the government appoints the opposition representative. What sense does that make? There is a duly elected representative in that constituency to see about the affairs of the people. The law requires that the opposition select its own representative, not the government. So why is it that the government in that situation, why is it that it is the government and the rep has no say whatsoever in who represents us on the village council, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we on this side are committed to the philosophical principle of fighting the wrong that needs resistance and helping the cause that needs assistance. We do not believe in a handout, but the creation, given a hand up. We do not believe in helping temptation to step, but in helping them grow. Mr. Speaker, in keeping with the progressive ideological perspective, I must commend the Prime Minister for keeping the full subsidy, because finally he understands that this is certainly a cause that needs assistance. That is a positive move in his reform political life, to keep programs from the previous administration that result in the direct benefit of the people. And let us see how long this is going to last, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the government of Trinidad and Tobago, for example, via the Ministry of Education, provides free transport. They provide free textbooks and meals to students of primary and secondary school. You may recall, Mr. Speaker, that our government announced its clear intention to introduce a school book program to elevate the plight of the many struggling parents in this country. We were on the right path, Mr. Speaker, and we understand this short interruption. At this time, only at this time, but rest assured, the people will get what they deserve. We know, Mr. Speaker, that the people have already recognized the bluff and the empty promises. We can see it. We can feel it. They talk about it all the time. You name the location, and there is somebody who can tell you about all the bluff and the empty promises. Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister's budget is pivoted on three main planks: job creation, development in construction, and fiscal consolidation. What is interesting is that that is the big savior. The same VAT he referred to in the language of slaves, oppressive. I wonder what it is now. Mr. Speaker, statistics show that agriculture will remain the largest single occupation for the foreseeable future. For too long, this sector has been regarded by planners primarily as the source of essential food production. Historically, agriculture has also played a major role as an engine for economic growth and employment. So let me go into that, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm sure, as an avid reader, you know all too well that in post-war Japan, in post-war South Korea, and more recently in Thailand, rising agricultural productivity and a shift to commercial crops have been dynamic engines for economic growth, has led to job creation, Mr. Speaker, has higher income and higher purchasing power, Mr. Speaker, has wider markets for produce and growth of downstream industries, Mr. Speaker. Another example, Mr. Speaker, in Taiwan, Mr. Speaker, this was the result of conscious strategy to utilize agriculture to stimulate job creation and domestic demand. That is why, Mr. Speaker, in my maiden budget address in 2007, I questioned what all the fuss was about between China and Taiwan, and that in terms of a choice, we should just Taiwan And so we did. Mr. Speaker, there was logic in our foreign policy approach. As for this regime, its foreign policy approach requires a heavy injection, often in a special advisor, to tell us what the Prime Minister himself said in his policy address. When he proudly announced the pledge of 3 million from the government of the Republic of China on Taiwan. So it is well known where the foreign policy of this current administration is heading. It is documented. Mr. Speaker, there are so many reasons, as you can see, why we should invest in agriculture. It is unbelievable why this government appears to take a different view. I just cannot understand this government's lackluster attitude in failing to invest in agriculture. Mr. Speaker, Khalid George, an expert in the field of agronomy, a former minister of this government, advised the government to stop wasting money, to stop throwing away and squandering our limited resources. Mr. Speaker, this government refuses to call that judge. Mr. Speaker, in dealing with the challenges of our region, the experts point out that the vast technological gap between the levels of agricultural productivity achieved by most developing countries and the highest yields achieved globally, representing an enormously untapped potential for stimulating economic growth and job creation. Additionally, Mr. Speaker, the reduction in agricultural subsidies to farmers in industrial nations called for in the recently signed DAP trade agreement will generate far higher international demand for agricultural exports from developing countries. So why this lackluster approach and attitude? We do not see any major plan for the revitalization of agriculture by this government. All conclusions, Mr. Speaker, know that it is unwise to put all our eggs in one basket. The real question, Mr. Speaker, is this. Is it the government's intention to return this disillusioned economy to a state of transition after all the gains that we have made in agriculture over the last 5 years? Is it, Mr. Speaker? Mr. Speaker, I can recall, Mr. Speaker, from 1997 to 2006, this Labour Party government, from budget after budget after budget, spoke about the economy in transition, taking it and moving it away from productivity into service. So, going through this budget, Mr. Speaker, this is what I realize is happening again. Mr. Speaker, we must rethink and find creative ways to use agriculture as a vehicle for growth. When in government, we started in the direction of agro-processing and cut flowering, among other initiatives, as is evident by the supporting infrastructures built at Yunlong and Babano. Mr. Speaker, the member for VFOR North went on and on and on, trying to explain to the officials and the farmers that despite all the campaign promises, there isn't much in the budget for them. Mr. Speaker, the much talk about blueprint for growth is based on the fickle foundation of mutual promises. I want to remind them, Mr. Speaker, that promises are like babies, easy to conceive but hard to deliver. Now that the Labour Party is in government, They split up by the presentation process in pieces as a delayed tactic because they find it hard to deliver. They come with a nice policy, hoping that single mothers will smile. As Morgan Heritage put it, nothing to smile about. Mr. Speaker, with the promises, with the promise of jobs, and 100 million in the economy, all we hear now is talk, and water. The tone of the Governor General in her speech was clear. Very, very clear. Could not have been clearer. There is nothing to smile about. What happens after the political honeymoon, Mr. Speaker? What happens? I think what happens is as clear as crystal water. The honey goes to the moon, Mr. Speaker, and consequently the people suffer. This is not what we are striving for our people. Maybe, Mr. Speaker, just maybe, some people believe that you can fool all the people all the time if the advertising is right and the budget is big enough. Just maybe. Speaking about advertising, Mr. Speaker, that is what the member for Castries East was doing in his presentation. I suppose it is time to tell the member, move on, as he is now in government. And it is time to govern and stop complaining. For time and time again, I sat on that other side and heard these sentiments coming from you. And now, what are you doing? Mr. Speaker, by now the member should place a red blanket over the flashing mirrors, and he must stop the mirror dance. He must stop making excuses. He must focus on the goals of governance, as there is no need for untruth anymore. Stop peeping behind that wall. There is no more need for hatred, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, when it comes to dealing with the budget, this government problem lies in reconciling its gross habit with its net income. I will repeat, Mr. Speaker, when it comes to dealing with the budget, this government problem lies in reconciling its gross habit with its net income. You know, this is true, but it is sad. It is true, but so sad. But any solution will tell you that this is so true. Others share the view, Mr. Speaker, share the view of Louisiana Senator Mary L. Landrieu, that the budget should reflect the values and priorities of our nation and its people. Needless to say, Mr. Speaker, that what the Prime Minister delivered in his budget policy pronouncement is, to my mind, a wedding budget. Is the purpose of this government re-election wedding ceremony to show all of their friends and party diehards how much money they can afford to throw out the window? Is it? So, Mr. Speaker, they throw some nice things expecting the people to smile in this fine time. So, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, the utterances from the throne echo the prevailing sentiment that the Caribbean region is at a development crossroads, and its member nations must take significant and concrete steps to improve productivity and competitiveness. This is vital in facing up to more global competition if we are to accelerate or even maintain the fast growth, says a new World Bank report. By taking such steps, Mr. Speaker, we will reposition ourselves strategically as an emerging trading bloc for goods and services. Without such action, Mr. Speaker, we risk growing economic marginalization and erosion of many of the social gains of the last few decades. There are a lot of progress has been made in the past, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, again, according to the flagship 15 country report, named A Time to Choose Caribbean Development in the 21st Century, the report says that the region needs to, and I will just go through two of what the region needs to do. The region needs to move beyond decades of reliance on traditional markets and trade preferences to swiftly adapt to diversify into new sources of growth. The region needs to exploit its natural advantages of location, environment, political stability, and democratic traditions. Citing the examples, Mr. Speaker, of Ireland and Singapore, the report argues that small economies, despite their size, can be competitive in many sectors, particularly in niche marketing. Mr. Speaker, moving on, in the area of emerging opportunities, the report offers upbeat prospects for diversifying the traditional tourism products and for exploring opportunities in other industries. Mr. Speaker, an increasing demand in new product areas such as adventure and cultural tourism, ecotourism, and upscale resorts provides an opportunity for the region to revitalize the mature tourism sector, which was born out by the success of the St. Lucia Jazz Festival, the Dominica Creole Festival, and the increasing eco-agrotourism across the region. What does this mean, Mr. Speaker? Mr. Speaker, this means a strengthened focus on rural tourism, such as the eco-agrotourism initiative in the General Mabuya Valley area. Such programs should extend to NICU, Mr. Speaker. Such programs should extend to VFR North, Mr. Speaker. And VFR North has a very impressive waterfall, Mr. Speaker, at Fort Joyeux. Such programs should extend to Labrie and to Swaziland, Mr. Speaker. There will be lots of jobs that will be created if these programs are extended. But what did we hear about this, Mr. Speaker? Mr. Speaker, other positive examples are cited throughout the report, with offshore education, health services, and information and communication technology. Other activities identified as possible additional areas of potential growth, particularly for English-speaking countries, Mr. Speaker. What are we doing for our youth in this regard, Mr. Speaker? What is in the budget for them, Mr. Speaker? The government says plenty, but I feel empty. Mr. Speaker, in offshore education, medical schools represent a small but growing service sector that has responded to a growing and unfulfilled demand for physicians in the United States. How, Mr. Speaker, will we be able to avoid the dangerous slippages of unemployment that is increasing particularly among our youth, as well as increasing inequities that are emerging while productivity is falling? And all of this, Mr. Speaker, contributing to stagnant or declining economic activity. Without urgent remedial action, our prospects are not prospects at all. Mr. Speaker, I am yet to see where these critical issues are addressed in the bill, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I do not see any concrete forward-thinking initiatives and approaches get serious here at addressing our dilemma. Mr. Speaker, the governing political party must. Mr. Speaker, the governing political party must stop the promises. Forget the red roses and focus on the potential capacities and possibilities of the land and the people, for that is the only way we can see the light. What is apparent is that this budget, Mr. Speaker, is void of visionary outlook. Is bankrupt of foresight and is pregnant with promises which, to my mind, is near impossible to deliver. But we will report to the people after a year. Mr. Speaker, this controlled, centralized approach to development is very infantile. Mr. Speaker, this controlled, centralized approach is also handicapped. Mr. Speaker, let me now turn to about two areas. In about two areas, Mr. Speaker, where I believe needs urgent attention, because the gains we've made as far as the infrastructure of the Denry community might be lost if something don't happen. And as I speak about this, Mr. Speaker, these last few days of rainfall, you know, has brought sharp focus to what might become a dilemma. Mr. Speaker, the first area that I want to touch on is what was mentioned by the member for Sufre. You know, up to a day like today, the member kind of see the wisdom in the construction of drains. You know, the Denry people right now are thankful. When it rains in the Denry village, people don't worry about their homes being eroded anymore. At least 90% of them don't. Because there was a concerted effort by your humble servant to see to it that this community was fitted with the necessary drainage. Concerted. So, Mr. Speaker, when I listen to members on the other side still criticizing what is termed T-canal, they have not gotten the lesson. Like I said some time ago, Mr. Speaker, like I said some time ago, there are still persons in our community who wish that there was a sea canal addressing the surface runoff after rains or during rains. There are still some persons being affected, Mr. Speaker. I think what members on the other side, on the government side, need to take into consideration. And I don't want to believe that the Minister of Finance shares his view. Because again, he's seen wisdom in the constituency development program. And this program helps in constructing the little drains that are needed in our constituency. Mr. Speaker, the development of the Denry constituency, or development agenda, is a planned one. What needs to be done now is the continuation of that development. What needs to be done now, what needs to happen now, is for the government to think and to realize that something good has started. Let us continue it for the benefit of the people. Mr. Speaker, the Ministry of Social Transformation is now completing a water project in the general constituency, specifically at Green Mountain. The idea was that this project would be completed and then the road in that community would also be given some attention. The gains that we have made in that constituency can evaporate if this road is not given some attention. And when it rains like this, like it has been for the last 3 days, serves as a reminder to the government to give these people some attention with that road. The project is now being completed, so I'm urging the Ministry of Infrastructure to go speedily to Green Mountain and think of how they can, one, protect the investment that was made in securing water for the people of Green Mountain. Because if the road is not taken care of, all the material to protect the pipes will be washed away. So there is a need, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, our schools. And what is said in the budget, in the presentation by the Prime Minister and the Minister of Education about the PEEP program. Again, let us put our foot on the gas pedal and let us get this project going.
Honourable Member, you have 15 minutes remaining to conclude your contribution.
Oh, Mr. Speaker. As if I started at 8:30 and it's still 8:30. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, so we have to thicken the stride of the big program so that the Clinton Mason Secondary School can get the deserved attention. I told the minister some time ago, and I will repeat, that the two old wings of that school, to me, will come down anytime. And I am afraid for our students. So something needs to happen urgently. So we need to quicken the pace of the beat. Mr. Speaker, it was very, very interesting, you know, to learn again from the Minister of Health and the member of Babolo, that the plans for the General Hospital, as she called it, they call it a polyclinic, but whatever, is going on smoothly. I know, and I did report to the House the last time that the work at the old location of the General Hospital had stopped. So we need to get this project going again so that the general people can enjoy the facilities of hospitals at a location that they are used to. Mr. Speaker, I said a little about the Denry Village Council. The Denry Village Council, Mr. Speaker, I know they will be given the responsibility to continue the development of the village. There are a few things I would wish to talk about concerning the composition of the General Village Council, but I'll leave that to talk to the minister in private. Because, to my mind, and because based on my knowledge of the constituency and of the people, we are now doing a disservice to the community. And like I said, Mr. Minister, I'll have that talk with you in chamber. I did mention, Mr. Speaker, that the Denry field, the Denry playing field that we started to rehabilitate needs the continued support of the Ministry of Youth Development and Sport. This constituency over the years, Mr. Speaker, has been one of the leading communities as it pertains to sport. And it goes way back when, long before my time. And as I mentioned during the last presentation, we actually have a young guy by the name of James Pierre, who has been selected to play for a team in Italy. This is making, you know, the community, which has been a very proud community, even prouder. So we need our sports facility to be completed, Mr. Minister. Mr. Speaker, as I conclude, let me remind the pundits of the blueprint for growth as it is claimed, and as all of them are familiar with, it's going to deal with the challenges. May I remind them, Mr. Speaker, that familiarity breeds a kind of complacency. In the words of Grover Cleveland, the only U.S. president ever to serve two non-consecutive terms, he was the 22nd and the 24th president, he said, and I quote, "The ship of democracy, which has weathered many storms, may sink through the complacency of those on board." Unquote. As conclusions, we cannot afford to be complacent. Instead, we must be vigilant and observant. We must be focused and determined. We must be unwavering, unyielding, and at all costs avoid hatred, anger, and pity. And as the Lebanese-American poet writer Carly Gibbon put it, "Pity the nation that is full of belief and empty of religion. Pity the nation that wears a cloth it does not weave. Pity the nation that eats a bread it does not have. Pity the nation that drinks a wine that flows not from its own wine press." Mr. Speaker, the architects of the Blueprint for Growth have promised milk and honey. COAP left. And they remind us how eloquently the vision for growth is expressed. One thing I do know, Mr. Speaker, is that pity is often an eloquent advocate. Mr. Speaker, let me take this opportunity to thank you for the opportunity to say my bid to the people of St. Lucia and to once again thank the people of January South, you know, for putting their trust in me, knowing that I will give them 100% of my effort and that I stand for the community, I stand for everyone, and I live by the philosophy that Estill is for all. Mr. Speaker, I want to thank you, the members opposite, and to thank my colleagues for your attention. Mr. Speaker, may God continue to look after all of us. I thank you.